Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with our weekly update on social media. Well, Judicial Watch's new book was launched this week. I'll give you a report. The coup was discussed forthrightly, not by the big media, but by a comedian. I'll talk to you about that. We have this new Secret Service scandal that we're pursuing, yet another instance in which President Trump had his life put at risk. Plus, the Army was pushing a document detailing or labeling pro-lifers as terrorists. You're going to be outraged. And, of course, we've done, again, the heavy lifting to sue to find out what's happening there. Plus, there's this debate in Arizona about elections that's been ongoing for years now. A key official has been hiding records about what he's been doing as it relates to one of those battles. I'll talk to you about that as well. So much going on. First up is our great new book, my great new book for Judicial Watch, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, an investigative report on the left's attack on America. It's timely. It's needed. If you're a patriot, you're going to want to read this book, and you're going to want to read it now before the election. I posted a video explaining why just the other day.
Rights and Freedoms in Peril, an investigative report on the left's attack on America. Of course, that left-wing attack on America means attacking fair and free elections. This book details with receipts what happened in 2020 and what might happen in 2024. You really need to get it before the election, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, because it explains to you the threats to fair and free elections. Also, as importantly, and arguably more importantly, what can be done to protect fair and free elections. What must be done to protect fair and free elections? Rights and Freedoms in Peril. I encourage you to get this book, not just read it, but read it now before the election.
Yeah, you can get the book at judicialwatchbook.com. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's doing quite well on Amazon. And if you've read the book or are reading it and want to provide a review on Amazon or any of the other websites in which book reviews appear, I encourage you to do so, to encourage others to read it as well. And what I love about the book, here it is again, is that virtually everything happening today, meaning generally in the news, we cover in the book, but with receipts. Elections, as I talked about, the border, as I talk about, the lawfare against Trump, the crazed DEI reparation insanity. We cover it all in the book. And even if it doesn't matter who wins the election, the book is still going to be important because these issues aren't going away. So as part of this, the promotion for the book, you know, I've been doing a ton of interviews, and I visited the studios of WMAL, the big talk station here in Washington, D.C., with my friend Vince Colagnese the other day, and I kind of explained why it's important to track these issues not only now, but post-election.
Are they going to stop trying to pack the Supreme Court if Trump wins? Are they going to stop trying to jail Trump improperly if Trump wins? Are they going to stop targeting our First Amendment rights and say that disinformation and misinformation is a reason to censor American citizens if Trump wins? So not only does Trump need a clean house if he wins, as I would argue, but there's got to be this defense and offensive operation from those of us who want to promote the rule of law to protect the Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, Trump might lose. And if that's the result, my new book is even more important. The immigration crisis, you can expect, will just continue. Vice President Harris was on TV earlier this week. She was interviewed by Bret Baier of Fox News. And she was asked basic questions about immigration. And her answer, and this is not a political analysis, this is an analysis basically related to public policy and the reality of what went on, her answer was awful. Let's take a listen.
How many illegal immigrants would you
estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but
right
do you
now,
just a number. Is, do you think it's 1 million, 3 million?
Brett, let's just get to the point. Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
So your Homeland Security Secretary said that 85% of apprehensions.
I'm not finished. We have
it's a rough estimate of 6 million people have been released into the country. And let me just finish. I'll get to the question, I promise you.
I was beginning to answer.
So my book covers these issues. She refused to deal with the fact that President Biden, and she's responsible in part as the vice president, issued, you know, 90-plus regulations essentially opening the borders. And the first chapter in my new book for Judicial Watch is Planned Chaos at the Border. And this is the opening paragraph. On his first day of office, Joe Biden set about undoing as much of his predecessor's agenda and accomplishments as possible. Of the 17 executive orders he issued on January 20th, 2021, more than one-third of them related to immigration and the presence of millions of non-citizens in the country. So the border chaos was planned from the get-go, and her answer obviously was woefully inadequate, but even Democrats admit that her answer was not a, you know, doesn't answer the concerns that Americans have about the invasion she and Joe ushered in the last 4 years or so. And so the issue is going to continue. She obviously hasn't grappled with the prior actions of her administration. So if she wins, who knows what's going to happen? And this is why you need to get the book, because we talk about non-citizens unlawfully present here in the United States and what to do about it and what's been behind the push and who's responsible. It's not just the feds. There are the states. We talk about how San Francisco had a sanctuary policy or has a sanctuary policy that's deadly dangerous. I mean, with story after story, I'm sure you've been tracking, she's refused to grapple with this as well, the fact that aliens, non-citizens, unlawfully present, have been released onto the streets, not only by the feds, but by locals who have been enforcing sanctuary policies to protect criminal aliens from being deported. It's deadly dangerous. And people have died, been raped, been assaulted, otherwise been victimized as a result of this crime wave, a completely preventable crime wave of aliens. You know, and the other issue that it's going to continue because the left has so much writing on this is the issue of reparations. And in the book, I talk about the DEI scams. We already talked about last week, for instance, that we just sued the Air Force Academy over the brainwashing going on there of the cadets. And Judicial Watch has a massive civil rights lawsuit, a class action lawsuit against Evanston, Illinois, over America's first reparations program, essentially, trying to stop that, where certain eligible blacks, and only because they're black, get $25,000. And here's Kamala Harris recently on reparations.
So my agenda, well, first of all, on the point of reparations, it has to be studied. There's no question about that. And I've been very clear about that position. In terms of my immediate plan, I will tell you a few of the following. One, as it relates to the economy.
So there you have it. She wants to study reparations. She wants to study the destruction of America through setting one race against the other, forcing one race to pay reparations to another, or even forcing some blacks to pay reparations to other blacks. It's insanity. It's anti-constitutional, in my view, and would wreck the country if fully implemented. I mean, this is why you got to get the book, because it's never going to stop. And obviously, we want politicians who share our values to try to stop it. But there's always going to be challenges. And my view is you don't know how to address the challenges unless you know what they are and have them adequately defined and have you focused on who's partly responsible or largely responsible and what to do about it. And this is why this book is so important. You really need to get it now. Rights and Freedoms on the Left's Attack on America. It's available in bookstores now. This is the first week it's been released. It's been endorsed by our friends Cash Patel, by Tom Homan. Sean Hannity put out a nice statement about it. Catherine Herridge put out a nice statement supportive of Judicial Watch. And, of course, I know so many millions of American citizens value our work. And this book documents it. And the other big issue that's out there is election integrity. And Judicial Watch has been front and center in highlighting this issue. When I'll get to it a little bit later, actually, because I want to talk about something else first. I want to talk about the coup first, right? So the big political news this week, other than Kamala Harris's interview with Bret Baier, was the famous Al Smith dinner up in New York. And it's a dinner, I think it's a dinner for Catholic Charities. Is it Catholic Charities specifically or just the Archdiocese? Anyway, Catholic-related organizations. So it's a major political event nationally, especially in a presidential year, because the presidential candidates normally show up. And Kamala Harris, whose campaign is centering around killing legally the unborn children of legally killing unborn children throughout the entire 9 months of pregnancy, didn't show up. And you may recall her campaign surrogate last week had to, quote, apologize for mocking Catholicism and Christians with this vulgar representation of Holy Communion. So she didn't show up. But one of the issues that's been percolating, and I think it's interesting, and I've been highlighting it virtually alone. Other folks reference it, but I think it substantially needs to be pursued. And I've been pushing on it. And, you know, I've been pushing this online, and Judicial Watch has as well. We're investigating it. We have litigation concerning it now, which is the coup. And this is the video I've been pushing, asking questions about the coup. I'm going to keep on asking questions about it. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep on asking questions about it, just like I'm going to keep on asking questions about the coup. 15 million votes erased. No primaries for Kamala. She just gets the nomination. We're not allowed to ask how it happened. Is that the way democracy is supposed to work? Yeah. What's the answer? And the big media doesn't want to answer the question, or even ask it, I should say. And who's it left to? A comedian. The famous comedian Jim Gaffigan was the MC, comedian, host of the Al Smith dinner this week. And he had jokes skewering both sides. And this really was more of an observation that was truthful rather than a joke. Let's play that.
The Democrats have been telling us Trump's reelection is a threat to democracy. In fact, they were so concerned of this threat, they staged a coup, ousted their democratically elected incumbent, and installed Kamala Harris. In other words, all her dreams have come true. Really? It really makes you consider the power of prayer, right, Cardinal? Sometimes prayers take 3.5 years and a George Clooney op-ed.
So isn't it disgraceful that the comedian tells more truth about one of the most significant political developments in modern American history, which is the removal of Joe Biden from the campaign for the presidency? And she was asked indirectly about this issue. I encourage Bret Baier online to ask the question directly about the coup. But instead, he chose to ask, let's go to this later. Kamala was asked about Joe Biden's cognitive decline.
Let me ask you this. You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
Joe Biden, I have watched in from the Oval Office to the Situation Room, and he has the judgment and the experience to do exactly what he has done in making very important decisions on behalf of the American people.
There were no concerns raised?
Joe Biden is not on the ballot.
I understand.
And Donald Trump
but
is.
But you talked about.
Well, there you have it. She refused to answer the question. And go, let's go back to that tweet now. The coup seemed to be foundering a bit tonight. In an interview with Brett Baer, Harris refused to discuss what and when she knew about Biden's obvious and dangerous cognitive decline. And don't you agree that she should be asked to answer these questions under oath, assuming Congress ever gets back in town? I say that knowing that Congress probably won't come back in town, but I'm still going to say what Congress should do. I'm not going to give up, as I say. I am not going to give up asking questions about a coup in our democracy. She refused directly to answer the question about his cognitive decline. And how is it tied to the coup? Well, the supposed reason that he needed to be removed was that people were not confident in his ability to cognitively operate even during the campaign. So she can try to run from it, but that's the reality. She wouldn't be there but for the perception, in the least, of his cognitive decline. But as I said, the coup seems to be foundering. It looks like to me, and this is a political analysis, and I don't know how the election's going to turn out. I'm not going to tell you how you should vote. But I do see the way politicians behave, and it looks like Kamala Harris is behaving as if she's losing. Especially when you review the Brett Baer debate. And the coup didn't work in that regard, right? Because she seems to be losing. Now she could win in the end. I don't know. But as more details about, I guess, the coup plotters emerge or confirmation, I guess the more questions I have. Robert Kennedy's widow, Ethel Kennedy, passed away recently. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s mother. A historically significant person. So her funeral was the other day, I think in St. Matthew's Cathedral here in Washington, D.C. I think she lived in the area. I think she lived in McLean. So President Clinton and President Obama and President Biden attended the funeral of Mrs. Kennedy. And there's this video, and let's put that video up. We'll just keep on replaying it. Of Obama and Joe talking. And so as you see from the video, the New York Post hired a lip reader to kind of read what they were talking about. I've seen some funny videos where they kind of splice into bad lip reading. Is that what the videos are kind of called? So some of them pretty not appropriate, but some of them pretty funny. And this is what they quote Biden as saying, according to the lip reader. So take it for what it's worth. She's not as strong as me. I know that's true, Obama agreed, saying we have time. Yeah, we'll get it in time, said Biden. And then moments earlier, Obama said it's important we have some time together. So it's unclear what that meant. So anyway, to me, to the degree that lip reader can be believed, it's further indication that Obama is in deep when it comes to the coup against Biden. And they thought they could wire the election, in my view, improperly. Because I think there are significant civil rights issues and legal issues with erasing the votes effectively of upwards of 15 million people to remove Biden from the head of the campaign. So we're just going to keep on keeping on. So what's next in my topics, guys? Voting. So another major section of the book, as I noted, is the election controversies. We talk about 2020. We talk about the need to make sure voting rolls are cleaned. We talk about the need for voter ID. Again, it's pretty clear cut where Kamala Harris stands. There's this video from 2021 where she's attacking voter ID.
Is agreeing to voter ID one of those compromises that you'd support?
I don't think that we should underestimate what that could mean. Because in some people's mind, that means, well, you're going to have to Xerox or photocopy your ID to send it in to prove you are who you are. Well, there are a whole lot of people, especially people who live in rural communities, who don't. There's no Kinko's. There's no Office Max near them. People have to understand that when we're talking about voter ID laws, be clear about who you have in mind and what would be required of them to prove who they are. Of course, people have to prove who they are, but not in a way that makes it almost impossible for them to prove who they are.
Well, there you have more word salads from her, obviously opposing voter ID. 80% of the country supports voter ID, and Ms. Harris doesn't. And sure enough, her Justice Department, the Biden-Harris Justice Department, in a brazen disregard for election integrity and, frankly, a brazen endorsement, effectively, of non-citizen voting, sued the state of North Carolina to stop them from removing, Virginia, that's right. They've sued North Carolina on voter ID many times under Obama. But in Virginia, they have a program to remove non-citizens from the voter rolls and on a case-by-case basis. Now, Judicial Watch has used the law called the National Voter Registration Act that requires states to clean up the rolls quite effectively. We've, through that process in the last year and a half or 2 years, removed upwards of 4 million names from the rolls, dirty voting names. And what did the DOJ do to help us? Zilch. Nothing. But they're pretending that law requires states to leave non-citizens on the rolls, even if they know they're not supposed to be there and they are non-citizens. Glenn Youngkin talked about it, the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the other day and explained what his law does.
That bill was signed in 2006, and it requires us to use DMV data where people self-identify as non-citizens to then go through a process of removing them from the voter rolls if they're on the voter rolls. And guess what? That's exactly what we've been doing. It's been happening for 18 years. Democrat governors, even Terry McAuliffe and Ralph Northam, use this process all the way up through into October. Someone walks into the DMV. They identify themselves as a non-citizen. Somehow or another, either by accident or by purpose, they register to vote. They're on the voter roll. We go through a process of notifying the registrar that they need to be told that if they cannot affirm their citizenship in 14 days, they're taken off the voter roll.
And I think they have a similar lawsuit against Alabama, who has taken steps to try to clean up the rolls of non-citizens. And to me, it's an endorsement of alien voting by the Department of Justice. I talked a little bit about it on with Charlie Kirk earlier. I think it was earlier today. I know it was earlier today. I'm not that out of it. Let's run that.
Can you walk through that, how dirty voter rolls are the original sin of broken elections?
You highlight when you have mass mailing of ballots and you have voters who shouldn't be there, there's a good chance voters who have moved away, who are dead, are going to get ballots in the mail. Or there's a chance because the names have been old and people know, and fraudsters track this. You know, the parties track this. It's available to everyone who's voted recently, who's likely moved away. And you can, just because you're inactive and haven't voted for a long time, you're still on the registration list and votes can be made in your name. So if there's no voter ID, or as you point out, the balloting takes place away from the voting place, meaning unsupervised voting through the mail, it's much easier to get away with fraud voting in someone else's name. And we don't have to prove whether it happens or not. That's the risk. And that's why the law requires the states take reasonable steps to clean up the rolls. The left doesn't want to do anything reasonable to curtail voter fraud, or the concern that Americans have that, what do you mean you're not taking dead people off the rolls? Are you expecting us to believe the election is going to be honest if that's the case? They don't want to clean them up. And as I said, the Justice Department and the left fight us. Well, in this case, the left fights us tooth and nail. All these Soros operations, all these Mark Elias type groups are coming in and trying to stop us from cleaning up the rolls. And on top of it, the other big issue, I think, this year, Charlie, and I'd be interested in your views on this, is the counting of ballots after Election Day. I don't think it should happen at all. In the least, counting ballots that arrive after Election Day is anathema. And the federal law sets an Election Day. Taking ballots in after Election Day and counting them is obviously contrary to law.
Correct.
But 18, 19 states do it. We have a big case in Mississippi. They count ballots that arrive for 5 days after election. In Illinois, they allow ballots to come in for up to 2 weeks after Election Day. California, it's 7 days. And, you know, those states, you may say, may not impact presidential campaigns, but they certainly impact other campaigns as well. Plus, it undermines voter confidence. Counting ballots after Election Day invites voter fraud, undermines voter confidence, and I would argue is illegal.
So that's what the DOJ should be focused on, right? Enforcing federal law, cleaning up the lists. And when they go after Virginia, they're essentially sending a signal to every other election official across the land: you remove non-citizens from the list, we're going to come after you. And I talked about it further on Fox News a few days ago.
Meantime, the DOJ has filed a lawsuit against the state of Virginia over Governor Glenn Youngkin's executive order to purge voter rolls inside 90 days of the election. We want to discuss this legal challenge with the author of Rights and Freedoms in Peril, an investigative report on the left's attack on America, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. You know how much I love having you here, and in particular when it's a storyline like this one, because if you're an American, you don't want to be disenfranchised by having people on the voter rolls who either are passed on, moved out of state, or have no legal right to vote here, and yet the DOJ is fighting cleaning up the voter rolls. What could they possibly be thinking?
Well, you know what they're thinking. It's the last minute, and they want to stop a state from doing what they're supposed to do day by day, which is to make sure non-citizens aren't on the rolls. And when they find them, they need to remove them immediately. And what they're doing is they're flipping a law that Judicial Watch has used successfully to remove 4 million people from the rolls over the last 2 years or so, a law that requires the states to take reasonable steps to clean up the rolls. They're saying, well, that law means you can't remove these people. And it doesn't really fit because.
So that's where we are. The Justice Department comes down on the side. By the way, that Justice Department, the agency that runs these litigations, the Civil Rights Division, the voting section, you name it, all these internal bureaucracies within the Justice Department, it's all run by leftist liberals. Mostly Democrats, you can be sure. I mean, I'm not aware of any conservatives working over there. I mean, my colleagues used to work at the Justice Department. They worked in those divisions that enforce federal election law. When they left, virtually no one was there who shared any conservative values, any traditional approach to enforcing the rule of law on elections. I mean, now we have the Justice Department suing to make it more likely for non-citizens to vote in our federal elections. And when the left says, how dare you suggest that we want aliens to vote, that non-citizens to vote in federal elections. Well, their Justice Department is making it easier for them to do so quite explicitly 3 weeks before the election. So we're right to draw those conclusions, I think, that the goal of bringing in these invaders by the millions is to allow them to vote illegally. I've often noticed that the issue with immigration from the left, it's never been about getting the Hispanic vote. It's about getting the illegal alien vote. And we have proof of this in the great Commonwealth of Virginia and down in Alabama, where the Biden-Harris Justice Department is making it now nearly impossible for Virginia to remove non-citizens from the rolls. Same goes in Alabama, sending a signal nationwide. Hey, non-citizens, if you've made it this far, who knows? Maybe you'll be able to vote. Very dangerous in terms of election integrity. So we'll be monitoring this. We'll be trying to get information about what's going on there in addition to pursuing our own litigation and election watchdogging. But along those lines, I have an important new educational video to share with you. We created this to help explain the issue of cleaning up the voter rolls. I'm going to provide a separate link to it below so you can look at it and share it with your markets, as I say, your friends and family and colleagues and such. And it explains Judicial Watch's concerns about dirty voting rolls and counting ballots that arrive after election. Take a look at this new wonderful video that we developed to educate the American people on the issue of clean elections.
When it comes to elections, Americans want and expect them to be fair and honest. They don't like voter fraud, and they want common sense measures preventing it from ever happening. Unfortunately, there is an election integrity crisis in our country, and many Americans know elections rules are bent and broken. Too many states have different election laws and procedures that conflict with existing law, while others simply ignore existing election laws or just don't know enough about them. This dangerous combination can cause Americans to feel disenfranchised and lose confidence in our elections. The battle for election integrity is ongoing, and Judicial Watch is on the front lines, doing everything it can to ensure our elections are fair and honest. Part of our work involves getting states to clean up their voter rolls in compliance with a law called the National Voter Registration Act, or the NVRA. This law contains provisions requiring states to clean and update their voter rolls by removing people who have passed away or simply moved to another state. Unfortunately, many states haven't cleaned up their voter rolls in years, and the federal government hardly enforces the NVRA at all. And as a result, dirty voter rolls increase the likelihood of fraud in elections. If a mail-in ballot is sent to a voter who no longer lives at their address or died, and if their voter registration information isn't updated, anyone living there could simply submit the ballot using the prior resident's identity. The potential for voter fraud exists, and that's where Judicial Watch comes in. Our team of investigators and attorneys are hard at work regularly reviewing voter roll data from across the country. We send notice letters and even file lawsuits against states to make sure voter rolls are cleaned up as the law requires, because Americans know dirty voting rolls can mean dirty elections. Over the past 2 years, Judicial Watch's litigation resulted in 4 million ineligible names being removed from the voter rolls. In a historic victory for election integrity, a lawsuit we filed against the state of California resulted in the removal of 1.2 million ineligible names from voter rolls. Now, California is at less risk for voter fraud. Judicial Watch also settled a lawsuit against New York City after it removed over 566,000 ineligible names from the voter rolls, and it promised to take reasonable steps going forward to clean its voter registration lists. In North Carolina, our litigation resulted in the removal of over 430,000 inactive registrations from its voter rolls, And in Pennsylvania, Judicial Watch forced the removal of nearly 180,000 ineligible registrations from the state's voter rolls. It isn't easy cleaning dirty voter rolls. It takes a lot of time and effort. But Judicial Watch is happy to do the work the government does not want to do. States can try to stonewall us, but our team of lawyers and investigators are prepared to fight these legal battles in court. While some states don't update their voter rolls, others allow votes to be received and counted after Election Day, in violation of existing election law. Congress recently reaffirmed a single national Election Day when it passed the Electoral Count Reform Act. Federal law says the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of every even-numbered year is Election Day for federal elections. There is just not supposed to be an election week or even an election month. Extending the counting of ballots runs counter to federal law and invites fraud and undermines voter confidence. Right now, Judicial Watch is suing Illinois and Mississippi for allowing ballots, including mail-in ballots that may not even be postmarked, to be received and counted days and weeks after Election Day if the ballots are dated on or before Election Day. As you can see, Judicial Watch is hard at work ensuring our elections are fair and honest. And you can be assured we are ready to do the heavy lifting to make sure they stay that way, because no one is above the law.
So we'll post a link below to that video. I encourage you to share it so others understand about these essential election integrity issues. As I've been noting, these issues won't go away with the election. The election will be cleaner as a result already of Judicial Watch's heavy lifting. But as I've been noting, we have ongoing lawsuits right this minute in Illinois, California, one planned for Oregon. We have Mississippi, Illinois again over the counting of ballots after Election Day. And so we're just going to keep on keeping on, hopefully with your support. So next up is the other crisis, one of many, facing Washington, D.C., which is the corrupt incompetence of the Secret Service that nearly has gotten Trump killed not once but twice. Judicial Watch has been second to none in investigating these issues. FOIA after FOIA, at least two dozen plus FOIAs. We've gotten documents from the local officials and police departments up in Pennsylvania that the media hasn't gotten, including pictures and audio recordings of the radio communications of the local police. A pretty incredible material. We've sued for records about the Secret Service's refusal to provide protection to President Trump. We've been stonewalled, though, on virtually everything from the FBI, on virtually everything we've asked for about the assassination attempt from the FBI and the Secret Service. So that's been kind of a battle. I'm not quite sure how and if we're going to sue on that because the courts are so skeptical or so, I shouldn't say skeptical. Especially in Washington, D.C., the courts are deferential, outrageously, to the FBI and DOJ on these law enforcement issues. So that's going to be a challenge. But there are other issues related to the failures of the Secret Service that Judicial Watch has been pursuing. And I talked about this issue just a few weeks ago here on The Update, or we ran a clip of a post I put up on social media. Let's run that.
Incredible. Nearly a month to the day after they nearly got him killed, there's been another Secret Service security breakdown surrounding President Trump. Susan Crabtree of Real Clear Investigations reported a female agent left her post at a Trump event just before he got there, didn't tell anyone to go breastfeed her child. And she brought her family back behind the security perimeter with her without pushing them through and having the Secret Service and other security vet them. Incredible breakdown in security, again, by the Biden-Harris Secret Service. They're going to get Trump killed unless this issue is treated like the emergency it is. Now, in the meantime,
So, you know, I don't just come on and talk about this. I mean, I talk about these issues in part to educate you, but also to report to you that we are actually investigating what I'm talking about. And we just sued for records on that very issue. And it's all due to the disclosure of an independent reporter, Susan Crabtree. If you're not following her on Twitter or online, I encourage you to do so. It's at Susan, at Susan Crabtree. So that makes that easy. And she posted the following tweet report on this, and I'll read in part from it. Shortly before Trump's motorcade arrival, I'm told 5 minutes beforehand, the site agent was getting ready for the arrival, and that person's in charge of the entire event security, and this is in North Carolina. And he does one final sweep of the walking route and found the agent at issue breastfeeding her child in a room that is supposed to be set aside for important Secret Service official work, i.e. a potential emergency incident related to the president. A working agent on duty cannot bring a child to a protective assignment. I think that goes without saying, right? And the agent was in the room with two other family members. The agent and her family members bypassed the uniformed division checkpoint and were escorted by an unpinned event staff into the room to breastfeed. Unpinned means they have not been cleared by the Secret Service to be there. So no one was cleared to be there. Her family wasn't there. She had left her post. And now there's a stonewall about the scandal. So Susan pushes the report out, and then Judicial Watch filed a FOIA request, and this report was pushed out on what day? I can't tell from the tweet. In August. I guess it must have been August, because it was a month after the assassination attempt. So we almost immediately filed a FOIA request to the Department of Homeland Security, which is the agency in which the Secret Service resides, on August 15th. So we wanted to know, give us all records about that event. And not only that, we want records from the top leadership of the Secret Service about that event. And they denied our request. They simply just denied it within a week, which is pretty unusual. Usually they take, either they ignore it or take a little longer to deny it. So we sued. It's what we do. We don't sue every time, but we think people's lives are on the line here. President Trump's life is on the line. I think President Biden's life is on the line. I think President Obama's life is on the line. Bill Clinton's, Jimmy Carter's, George W. Bush's, all protectees. There are 40 protectees of the Secret Service, and I'm afraid because of politics, incompetence, DEI, you name it, these protectees are at risk, and Trump specifically, because there's this political animus against him, I think, by leadership in the agency and their bosses in the Biden, I'm transposing, the Biden-Harris administration. Maybe I should just call it Biden for short, right? Another reason to get our new book, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, because we go through the Secret Service scandals. And this was even before the assassination. I mean, you won't believe what the Secret Service has been doing in terms of allowing its agents to be bitten repeatedly by Joe Biden's dog 25 times. His dogs bit Secret Service agents and they did nothing. And we wouldn't even known about it but for Judicial Watch. Or Obama's chef dying and the Secret Service having no working equipment to try to rescue him, no working boats. This book is going to knock your socks off in that regard. And of course, since then, we've been investigating and exposing the Secret Service DEI insanity. Every action, every day has to advance the DEI agency, the DEI agenda in the Secret Service. Every action, every day. And I'm not just summing it up. That's literally the quote from the documents. So pray for President Trump. Not that he gets elected. I mean, you can if you'd like, but pray for his safety. Because this Secret Service is out of control. I mean, they get an agent who abandons her post, reportedly, and we ask basic questions about it, and we can't get answers. What else is out there is what I want to know. And we're just, again, I keep on saying, we don't give up. Now, sometimes we have to stop because we can't get anywhere legally, or, you know, we've come to the end of the road. But we never give up the pressure for information and the reasonable expectation that the government tell citizens what they're up to so they know how their money's being spent or misspent, either wisely or unwisely, abusively or non-abusively. We have a right to know. It's our money. They work for us. And so we just never stop pushing and trying to smash through the stone walls of government secrecy. Especially since the government can be so darn nasty and vicious and frankly evil in its treatment and contempt for American citizens. And by way of introduction, I bring you, that was my way of introducing my next story, our next important Judicial Watch lawsuit. Judicial Watch sued the United States Defense Department for details of a U.S. Army training manual or materials that designated pro-life organization or individuals as terrorists. Yeah, terrorists. Not terrorists as terrorists, just regular Americans who support protecting and extending the right to life to unborn human beings. There was a photo that circulated on social media that shows a slide from a presentation to train soldiers down at Fort Liberty, which used to be known as Fort Bragg. Look at this. Look at this slide. So there you have up top terrorist groups, anti-abortion, right to life, and Operation Rescue. Those aren't terrorist groups. Pro-life, so you're pro-life, you're a terrorist. National Right to Life is the nation's, I think, oldest pro-life organization. They're not terrorists. Operation Rescue aren't terrorists. Types of advocacy. Well, then they say oppose Roe versus Wade. So it looks like there's an indication of illiteracy with whoever wrote this because they couldn't spell Roe properly. They probably never saw it in print because they don't read. Types of advocacy, demonstrations and protests protected by the First Amendment, mass demonstrations protected by the First Amendment, life chain protected by the First Amendment, depending on the context. The rescue, I'm not even sure what that means. The truth display, we don't want people telling the truth about abortion. Picketing, explicitly First Amendment protected activity. Counseling, sidewalk, First Amendment protected activity. Crisis center, pro-life crisis centers where pregnant mothers are given options other than killing their unborn children. The left hates it because they're a death cult and they want to have abortions for pregnant mothers. They don't want them to save their babies. And look at this. You got to look at this. I'm for it. Choose life. Choose life makes you a terrorist. And of course, you know, the Army's pretending, oh, this is a mistake. I don't buy it. Army mistakes are usually codified by like 37 layers of organizational approval and bureaucratic approval up the chain of command. And you can be sure this document just didn't show up down there in Fort Bragg or Fort Liberty. It showed up elsewhere. The Christian Post did a story on our lawsuit. Well, let me just talk to you about what we're doing about it. I'm not just yelling about it. We want accountability. So we want documents about this document, right? We want to know how this happened. We want documents from the leadership about how this happened. So we asked both the Army and Special Command Operations, U.S. Army Reserve at Fort Liberty, for these records. So, you know, when you do these FOIAs, you have to kind of know where to push them organizationally, because you don't want to give the bureaucrats a reason to avoid answering questions. So we asked for these records in, I guess, August of this year. And when did the story come out? Do we know? It was in July, so we pursued it shortly after it came out. And here's what the government was saying initially in response. Christian posted a story today on our lawsuit. Could be around 40 people who were at the training where this smear was posted. It was for a training session for soldiers who manage access points, and they've initiated a formal investigation into the matter. Supposedly, this slide has been in use for 15 years in the Army. It looks like this is a slide that was reused that already was used about 15 years ago. It made the news then, and it just resurfaced. So I have to go back and see if the story came up 15 years ago. Maybe Judicial Watch uncovered it 15 years ago. I don't know. Maybe. Fort Liberty responded, sharing the following statement on Facebook. After conducting a commander's inquiry, we determined that the slides presented on social media were not vetted by the appropriate approval authorities and do not reflect the views of the, I think it's the 18th, I'm glad I was taught Roman numerals in Catholic school, 18th Airborne Corps and Fort Liberty, the U.S. Army, or the Department of Defense. The slides were developed by a local garrison employee to train soldiers manning access to control points at Fort Liberty. These slides will no longer be used, and all future training products will be reviewed to ensure they align with current DOD anti-terrorism guidance. Well, that's not sufficient. I mean, who was this contractor? How much money were they paid? I mean, we want to know the truth about this. And as we've noted previously, with the FBI targeting of churches, Catholics, talked about sending the FBI to parishes to get spies within the parishes to expose their supposed terrorist threats. It wasn't just in one office like they initially tried to pretend it was. It was broader than that in other offices. And I suspect we'll find that here, but we'll see. The fact that they haven't given us any documents is an indication they don't want us to know what the full truth is. It's not an indication. It's really confirmation. How many documents could there be about this one scandal? So it can't be an issue of, oh, there are too many documents. We can't possibly get them to you on time. I mean, if that were the case, we wouldn't sue. We'd negotiate a solution to get the records. So why on earth is the Army doing this? It's, as I've highlighted, again, in our new book, Rights and Freedoms in Peril, DEI is a core aspect of military training and leadership development. And those of you who are in the military, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm sure you've seen things like this and worse in trainings you've been forced to sit through as you've had your country, your faith, your beliefs denigrated, and a target put on your back because you share conservative views. DEI is the contagion that threatens America. It was never COVID. It's been DEI. As I say in our press release, the quote is good, and I don't remember exactly what it was, so I'm going to read it out loud to you, because it was a good quote. Let's be blunt. The radical leftist Biden-Harris administration is trying to set our military against conservative American citizens. And that we've had to sue after being denied basic records about the Army's targeting of pro-life Christians make the scandal worse. So this isn't the only lawsuit we have about DEI in the military and the consequences of it, which is calling terrorists people who want to save unborn babies. This is anti-American, and the fact it's in our army, to me, is a crisis. You know, I know everything seems like a crisis, right, when you hear me talk about it, but that's the reality. And we need more people in Washington, D.C. who recognize the various crises going on and stop pretending it's business as usual. Our military is under assault from within. They're trying to change our military into an anti-American institution as opposed to an American defense institution. I mean, they couldn't even get restrictions on this type of garbage in the recent spending fights. At least I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that's the case. That's my impression. And I usually trust my impressions. So you can fact check me on that. All of that has been protected. So we're going to keep on keeping on trying to provide defense for our military from the leftist abusers who want to transform our military into an operational arm of the left to target Americans. So let's get back to the election controversies. Arizona has been a kind of an epicenter of election controversies since 2020 at least. Carrie Lake ran for governor. There were issues about the way her election was conducted. Still are issues, as best I can tell, that haven't been adequately answered. So there's been a lot of controversy there, and there's been a lot of infighting, even among Republicans, about how to handle these various issues. And Carrie Lake's been very aggressive in going after government officials who have been, in her view, remiss or negligent in the handling of their obligations to ensure that elections are conducted fairly and freely and result in accurate results and that voters aren't disenfranchised. And one of the key officials and offices in Arizona when it comes to elections is the Maricopa County Recorder. Now, that's kind of an unusual name, I know, but Maricopa County, for those of you who aren't familiar with Arizona, is, I think, the biggest county in Arizona. Essentially, it comprises much of the Phoenix area. And the recorder is one of the local entities, if not the local entity, responsible for managing and conducting elections. So the recorder is a powerful individual, an important individual when it comes to managing elections. And the recorder is Stephen Richer, who is the Maricopa County, Arizona recorder, as I've noted. And Carrie Lake said something about Mr. Richer that caused him to file a defamation lawsuit against her. And I don't know the details of the defamation lawsuit. I thought I'm not going to repeat what could be potentially defamatory. So that's neither here nor there. But what is here and not there is whether or not Mr. Richer used government resources in order to advance his personal lawsuit, his defamation lawsuit against Carrie Lake. And not only that, Mr. Richer has kind of made it a cause of his own to target the First Amendment speech of critics of election management. So if you're, you know, on the wrong side of these election debates, like Judicial Watch is, or Carrie Lake is, or Trump is, or other Americans who have concerns about the way elections have been conducted in Arizona in 2020 and since, or nationally, Stephen Richer thinks that there's got to be some First Amendment restrictions on your speech, as best I can tell, or a rethinking of the First Amendment related to election speech. So we asked for records about that, too. So we asked for records on his views on the First Amendment and what he was doing in that regard, and also any records about the use of government records and resources to advance this defamation lawsuit against Carrie Lake. Now, Carrie is working or running for the Senate now, too. In November 2022, Republican gubernatorial hopeful Carrie Lake questioned the results of Maricopa County's electoral procedures. Lake criticized both Richer and her opponent, Democrat Katie Hobbs, who's now the governor because she was certified the winner, who was the incumbent Secretary of State in charge of overseeing the election operations. In June of 2023, Richer filed the defamation lawsuit against Lake, as I detailed. On March 23rd, an article from the Arizona Free News reported, public records revealed that Maricopa County recorder Stephen Richer tasked staff with compiling articles and online content pertaining to the personal defamation suit against Carrie Lake, Senate candidate and gubernatorial candidate, as well as topics of personal political interest. He recently made the news again for aligning with the left-leaning state's United Democracy Center to target election speech. And as I noted in the release, it's curious that Judicial Watch is getting the runaround on the potential use of government resources to target Carrie Lake with a defamation lawsuit. To me, this is like a simple request, and I don't understand why Mr. Richer's office isn't responding. So we've sued in Arizona State Court. It's Judicial Watch versus Stephen Richer in his official capacity as Maricopa County Recorder. It was filed in the Superior Court for the state of Arizona after he failed to respond to a March 25th, 2024 open records law request for the records I described. So a relatively straightforward request, a lot of controversy about the way he's been operating his office, a lot of controversy about this defamation lawsuit. And, you know, we've waited a bit to get the records. We've been getting the runaround, and so we sued. And what I love about Judicial Watch, many things I love, is that it's not just Washington, D.C., that when other government officials or government offices, or government agencies in this case. Because to be fair to Mr. Richer, I don't know who's making the decisions over there in terms of responding to this FOIA request. But the law requires a response. The law requires a disclosure of certain information. And we haven't gotten that here. And it's not just the feds we sue. We sue at the state and local level to get access about what the government's up to. And, you know, if there's one thing I can say to you as a ordinary citizen and concerned patriot watching me now is that FOIA can be used by you. Look up if there's a local agency you don't like what they're doing, or maybe you do and you just have questions about how it's operating. Look up the rules on asking for documents about the decisions that you're concerned about and ask them for the records. Now, I know one of the big deals that people have about asking for records is the response they often get, oh, we'll give you the records, but you're going to have to pay some fees in order to get them. And oftentimes, that's legal. Okay, so just because they're asking you for money, it doesn't mean it's not appropriate under law. That being said, you know, ask away. Use FOIA to uncover what the government's up to at every level. Now, sometimes they'll just ignore you, and unfortunately, on a lot of sensitive issues or issues of high public interest, you'll get the runaround, and only a lawsuit will get it done. And that's just where Judicial Watch's expertise comes into play, because we have the capacity, thanks to the generous support of Americans like you, to sue when we're given the proverbial hand to the face by the government, no. And we're able to go to court, whether it be in the state of Arizona or here in Washington, D.C., against the most powerful government agencies in the history of humanity at the federal level. So it's a wonderful law, these open records laws. So we're not only suing in Arizona on this issue related to the way elections have been run and the view of a key official about suppressing the First Amendment rights of American citizens. But it's important for you to know that the laws that we use aren't just available to Judicial Watch. They're available to you, my dear fellow citizen. So we do this work on your behalf generally. But, you know, if there's something really specific and local that you're interested in, whether your school board, the school boards hate FOIA now because Judicial Watch has educated citizens and parents across the country and helped them directly and indirectly ask questions about what's being taught in the schools and what's going on. Or, you know, even something as simple as trash collection you can do FOIAs on. So don't be shy. It's your government. You paid for it. Ask a few questions here and there. And see what they give you. And they don't give you anything, but it's worth asking if the issue's important. Wow. So what an update, huh? We're getting close to the election. I know everyone's upset about the election, or I shouldn't say upset. Many are anxious about the election. And let me just give you some confidence in the election and potential outcomes. No matter what happens, Judicial Watch knows what to do. We know we have to hold the government accountable no matter who's president, no matter who runs Congress, no matter who's elected senator, no matter who's elected, you know, the Speaker of the House. Judicial Watch will be your independent voice and your independent watchdog in Washington, D.C. If Kamala Harris is elected, we have a certain set of challenges that we are preparing to meet. If President Trump is elected, we will have a different set of challenges that Judicial Watch will be prepared to meet. And the concerns that we have won't go away no matter who is president, whether it be for election security, border enforcement, the war on the Constitution by the left, the war on the rule of law, the war on our First Amendment rights. All those issues will remain front and center, at least for Judicial Watch, no matter who's elected president. So I know we're all anxious about who might win the election, but to the degree I can get you to relax, you can know that Judicial Watch is on the job, no matter what happens. With that, I'll see you here next time on the Judicial Watch Weekly Update.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.